You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Michael Dayton Herman. Michael, thanks so much for being with me today.
Hi, it's a pleasure to be here with you.
Michael, we're going to talk about your show, your really beautiful show called Reconstituted, and it's at Baxter Street and at the Camera Club of New York. And first, I want to congratulate you on this show and also jump right into the title, Reconstituted. What does that mean in this context? Are we talking about the process of how you're working or something else?
It's actually both. Both process and the concept. Reconstituted is a body of work that grew out of the idea that two seemingly disparate things can be true. The idea that the forces that bring us together can be the same forces that hold us back, and the things that are familiar can always hold the potential for rediscovery. I wanted to kind of make work that spoke to the relationship between tradition and invention as potentially harmonious forces.
You know, that makes sense to me, and it's so interesting. And of course, the segue into the process itself, which is many layered and unusual. And of course, Baxter Street is the venerable Camera Club of New York. So it's a show of photographs that don't look like photographs, right? But this is lens based. Can you tell me a little bit about as Baxter Street calls it, lens based artist initiative, which, you know, I guess is a broader view of photography, right? As long as a lens is involved somehow. Yours look very much like collages and paintings. Can you go through the process a little bit of this?
I will say generally my practice has always really dealt with photography, and I've long collected and created photographic images. And while each body of work is conceptually diverse, one of the common threads through my practice is finding purpose, power, and meaning in this relentless stream of content that we absorb. And I once wondered, you know, what if when your light flashes before your eyes, all you see is the content you absorbed, and what would that look like, and what would that say about you? And this new body of work is really, it's a advancement for me in terms of the process itself. It really started with photography, and it consists of color photographs that are digitally collaged.
I want to stop you right there because I want to talk about the digital, the process, the collage. But what you also just said was a pretty heavy narrative, right? You're talking about an end-of-life image where your life is flashing before your eyes. Did I get that right?
Yeah. You know, more and more, for as long as I've been making work, I've really been trying to find, you know, power, purpose, and meaning in this, whether it was magazines when I was younger or the internet and social media now. Just looking at these images and trying to really understand them from new angles. And, you know, now in this moment of AI and algorithms, I even think about whether or not the algorithms are learning from us, or if our behaviors are somehow being modified by this content that we consume. And in the end, it's probably a little bit of both.
But what does that have to do with this end of the world image? I mean, did I catch that right? That what you were after in these images is what you might see if your life flashes before your eyes. I took that to mean as kind of, you know, you're in your last breath or breaths, you have this kind of review of life image vision. But is that not exactly what you're talking about?
That is. That one question that I mentioned here is an example of a catalyst for body of work for me. And it ended up being a 40-minute video that I created that really tried to answer that question. You know, what if at the moment of your passing, your life flashes before your eyes and all you see is the content that you consumed? What would that look like? What would your life look like? And the story of your life, how can you tell that story through this content that you consume? And I think it's important to highlight that question because it really points to the import I put on, you know, some of these banal images that we consume and recognize that they actually they influence us. You know, all those things that we consume, whether it's movies or social media, they become part of who we are and influence us.
Well, right, but it's also kind of the ultimate nostalgia trip, right? This is the last nostalgia trip you'll ever have, right? I mean,
exactly.
It's a huge review. I think about, you know, years ago, I have memories that, you know, that flash before me regularly. But this is so that includes the images in this show. That's what these images are also tapping into. They're part of that body of work.
They are not. That was a prior body of work, and this new body of work is yet something else. And I think that it still taps into photography and my interest in images and how we can find power, purpose, and meaning in them. And in this case, you know, when I talk about how the forces that bring us together can also hold us back and the familiar can be have the potential for rediscovery, for this body of work, I was really wanting to find, you know, power in something that's banal and power in something that is discarded. And so I use this language of, you know, this post-truth era, and I wanted to use this Trump Loy language to create something beautiful and hopeful. And so that's really what I was wrestling with.
And let's talk about that. I'm glad we talked about both of those things, because that's, you know, they are both really big questions that we could just continue to talk about the content of, which is interesting in itself. I want to get into where I cut you off earlier. You were beginning to talk about the exact process, the lens-based process, and the other things that are happening here, which you said started with a digital image. I think that's where I changed the conversation.
Sure, that's right. It's a bit of a departure for me, because there's a kind of remixing and recycling that's happening in this body of work. It started with a color photograph that was then digitally collaged. I then printed that out. I physically collaged it, drew over it, and then re-photographed that physical collage, and then digitally re-collaged that with new photographic elements.
Okay, wait a minute. Let me stop you there. There's a bunch of steps there. When you photograph the collage, initially, what are you photographing it with? Like an analog or digital, or what kind of camera?
Digital. It was just my iPhone.
Oh, okay. So the collage, iPhone, and then go on. Then the next steps?
And then it would be digitally collaged with other photographic elements as well. And then that would be printed out again. So you'd still have it all be photographic. And then there was some elements that were worked on top of that and painted over. So it had this whole recycling and kind of remixed effect to it.
It's also a unique piece, right?
Correct. So each of the works have some hand painting on them, so they are each unique.
And so there aren't editions of these, unlike you know, many works in photography. These are unique pieces. They can't be additioned. I mean, they could be, but they wouldn't be really an addition, right? They'd all be different.
Correct.
Yeah, that's such a fascinating process. I hope you don't mind that I wanted to really break that down and see, because, you know, that's part of this gallery, too, is talking about lens-based photography and the expanded definition of that. And that's what you're doing, is expanding that definition, right? That this is your way of contributing to the definition of what it means to be lens-based, right? What it means to make an image with a camera.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So much of my work relies on photography, you know, capturing my own images, collecting other images, working digitally, and then printing them out and reworking them. So photography is a core part of my practice. But it's not
that's
in
exciting.
The traditional sense that you're so well articulating.
And the other images in the show, of course, there's, you know, this is a series. The images are similar. Can you talk about the differences between these? Why one image is stopped at one area? Do they have different narratives or feelings to you, or is that completely abstract? The difference between these images, which look very much like a kind of body of work.
Yeah, you know, I would just kind of broaden the scope a little bit and talk about my process. Each body of work is an invention. You know, I start from zero, and it usually starts with a concept, an idea, a question that I kind of wrestle with and want to figure out. I will then move to kind of research, and that includes reading, writing, image gathering, things like that. And then it will become much more aesthetic, where these are sketches and digital collages and really responding to the aesthetics of the work that I'm creating. And then at the end, it becomes quite intuitive. And I think this is where the magic happens as an artist. You just have to be willing to play. You have to be willing to fail. You have to be willing to try things. And I give myself the freedom when I'm creating works to do exactly that at the end of the process. So with this body of work, it started years ago, and I was thinking about how big and systemic so many of society's challenges are. And instead of really, you know, getting caught up in the anxiety of the moment, I really wanted to think about something that was a bit more hopeful and focus on some of the things that bring us together and not the things that drive us apart. So the first, you know, in terms of that conceptual and research stage of this, one of the exercises I did was look at the United States Constitution. It just got to the core of it, and really want to understand how that as a document held us together as a society, but also how it can hold us back in many ways. So the exercise that I did was to create a red line of that document, inserting and deleting amended texts into the original document. And it did show me that, you know, something so entrenched in tradition can be reinvented. But it also showed me it wasn't art. You know, I had this red line document, and I just thought, okay, that was an interesting exercise. But and I stewed about this idea of tradition and invention. And it wasn't until I completed my last body of work, which was very much invested in the kind of anxiety of the moment, where I realized, through one of the works that was much more abstract, that this language of abstraction can be an incredibly powerful tool for storytelling and for engaging people on a more conceptual and emotional level. In the same way that classical music doesn't have lyrics, it still can tell a story, and it still can conjure all kinds of powerful emotions. So with this learning, I set out to transform banal photographs of a swimming pool and discarded material of, you know, really the garbage of my studio into something extraordinary and powerful. So they became much, the most abstract works that I've made ever are the works that are in this exhibition.
And the painting itself, you know, approaching that, you know, I like the way you talk about giving yourself permission. Tell me about the painting, because that's also a different approach. You have to give yourself permission to paint on an image too, and do the work you're doing. So how do you approach the painting on it? Is that planned out at all, or how do you approach that?
It never is planned out. You know, sometimes while I'm working digitally and with the photographs, I have inclinations and think, oh, this is how it's going to end up. But when you're working on a screen, a laptop in front of you, it's a very different experience than the final work, which is this physical thing much larger that you have, you know, you're engaging with as a human, not just on a screen with your fingers. And so I never make decisions until the final work is actually in front of me. And some of the works in the show, you know, 90% of them are ended up being painted. And other ones, it's 10% ended up being painted. So I really try to allow that magic of being an artist, where you just allow yourself to play, take chances, take risks, fail. I allow that to be part of the process as much as possible. And I think that's where artists' magic happen.
I think so too. I love that. Yeah, I was thinking recently about how Dwayne Michaels, photographer, paints on his images sometimes, or did for a while. And I love that. I really love him and his work as well. But I like that approach. You have to. So the questions and some of the topics that you also just mentioned were political, right? That these are also images for the, as I think you said, post-truth or post-fact era. we finally are living in, if that's the term. I really hate to think we're living in post-truth, but that's part of what is happening here, right? That's part of the message, the narrative, the story of Reconstituted, correct?
I think it is. And I really, obviously there's a lot to be concerned about when you talk about a post-truth era. And, you know, there are various concerns raised about AI, and, you know, there's exciting things about AI. But what I really wanted to do was look at that language, this post-truth language, as a tool. And when you're working as an artist, I like to think of all of these things as tools and tools for me to use. People talk about NFTs as good or bad, or painting as dead or alive. For me, they're all neutral. They're just tools. And how can you use that tool? And so I wanted to use this language of the moment, whether you call it Trump lawyer, post-truth, to engage the viewers. And so when you look at some of these paintings, you're not so sure what's photographed, what's collaged, what's physical, what's printed, what's painted, what's not painted. And there's a relationship with it, because we're in this moment now where you're kind of questioning and doubting everything anyway. And so I really wanted to kind of tap into some of that language to create something beautiful and engaging for the viewer.
Mm-hmm. Thanks so much. And you certainly did. And I want to urge all the listeners who are hearing this to come to the show if they can. And, of course, there's more images here and links to learn from. I really appreciate your time talking to me today. And I want to ask you one more question before we go, which is, what are you reading at the moment? I'm always curious.
I'm currently reading a book, a novel. The name is Ilium by Leah Carpenter. And I usually read a lot of nonfiction. This is a fictional book about espionage. And I was just intrigued. I went to a talk that she gave recently at St. John the Divine, and decided to switch things up and read a fictional novel about espionage, which frankly is not something that I've read before, but I was just so impressed with her approach to this and the talk she gave that I decided to pick it up. So that's currently what I'm reading.
It's a kind of a thriller, I would imagine, in some ways, even though it's history, right?
Yeah, so far. And, there's not many female writers who have written about kind of espionage and spy novels. And so she comes at it as the daughter of somebody who was, I believe, in the CIA. And it is just a different lens than I think other people have done. So thus far, I'm finding it interesting. So I can't give you a full review yet because I'm only about a quarter of the way through it.
Yeah, that sounds so interesting. Well, I want to thank you so much for talking with me today. It's been terrific, and I want to wish you well with your exhibit.
Thank you so much. It was a real pleasure. I appreciate it.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.